I now schedule Catherine's weekly sessions at the end of the day because they were lasting several hours. When she came in the following week, she still had that peaceful look about her. She had talked with her father on the phone. Without giving him any details, she had, in her way, forgiven him. I had never seen her this serene. I marveled at the rapidity of her progress. It was rare for a patient with such chronic, deep-seated anxieties and fears to improve so dramatically. "I have a question to ask," I said, the next time she was resting in the peaceful light that comes between lives.
"Of whom?"
"Somebody. You or the masters," I hedged. "I think the understanding of this will help us. The question is this. Do we choose the times and the manner of our birth and our death? Can we choose our situation? Can we choose the time of our passing over? I think understanding that will ease your fears. Is there anyone there who can answer that question?" The room felt cold. When Catherine spoke again, her voice was deeper and more resonant. It was a voice I had never heard before. It was the voice of a poet.
"Yes, we choose when we will come back into our physical state and when we will leave. We know when we have accomplished what we were sent down here to accomplish. We know when the time is up, and you will accept your death. For you know that you can get nothing more out of this lifetime. When you have had the time to rest and re-energize your soul, you are allowed to choose your re-entry back into the physical state. Those people who hesitate, who are not sure of their return here, they might lose the chance that was given them, a chance to fulfill what they must when they're in the physical state."
I knew immediately and completely that this was not Catherine speaking. "Who is speaking to me?" I implored. "Who is talking?" Catherine answered in her familiar soft whisper.
"I don't know. Somebody who controls things, but I don't know who it is. I can only hear his voice and try to tell you what he says."
Catherine also knew that this knowledge was not coming from herself, not from the subconscious, nor from the unconscious, not even her superconscious self. She was somehow listening to, then conveying to me, the words or thoughts of someone very special, someone who controls things. Thus, another master had appeared, different from the one or several, from whom the previous wisdom-laden messages had come. This was a new spirit, with a characteristic voice and style, poetic and serene. This was a master who spoke about death without any hesitation, yet whose voice and thoughts were steeped with love. The love felt warm and real, yet detached and universal. It felt blissful, yet not smothering or emotional or binding. It relayed a feeling of loving detachment or detached loving kindness, and it felt distantly familiar. "What should you do, and I do, to make ourselves better?" I asked Catherine. "Are our paths the same?" The answer came from the master who had spoken earlier of intuitive powers and of returning from comas. The voice, the style, the tone were all different from both Catherine's and from the masculine poetic master who had just spoken.
"Everybody's path is basically the same. We all must learn certain attitudes while we're in physical state. Some of us are quicker to accept them than others. Charity, hope, faith, love. We must all know these things and know them well. It's not just one hope, and one faith, and one love. So many things feed into each one of these. There are so many ways to demonstrate them. And yet we've only tapped into a little bit of each one. People of the religious orders have come closer than any of us have because they've taken vows of charity and obedience. They've given up so much without asking for anything in return. The rest of us continue to ask for reward. Rewards and justifications for our behavior. When there are no rewards, rewards that we want. The reward is in doing, but doing without expecting anything. Doing unselfishly."
"What can I do to best help Catherine to overcome her fears and anxieties," I asked, "and to learn her lessons? Is this the best way, or should I change something, or follow up in a specific area? How can I help her the best? The answer came in the deep voice of the poet master. I leaned forward in my chair.
You are doing what is correct, but this is for you, not for her.
For me?
Yes. What we say is for you.
Not only was he referring to Catherine in the third person, but he said we. There were indeed several master spirits in attendance. Can I know your names? I asked, immediately wincing at the mundane nature of my question. I need guidance. The answer was a love poem, a poem about my life and my death. The voice was soft and tender, and I felt the loving detachment of a universal spirit. I listened in awe.
You will be guided in time. You will be guided in time. When you accomplish what you have been sent here to accomplish, then your life will be ended. But not before then. You have much time ahead of you. Much time.
When Catherine arrived for her next appointment 1 week later, I was ready to play the tape of our last incredible dialogue. After all, she was providing me with celestial poetry in addition to past life recall. I told her that she had related information from after-death experiences, even though she had no memory at all of the in-between or spiritual state. She was reluctant to listen. Overwhelmingly improved and happier, she had no need to listen to this material. Besides, it was all somewhat eerie to her. I prevailed upon her to listen. It was wonderful, beautiful, uplifting, and it came through her. I wanted to share it with her. She listened to her soft whisper on the tape for only a few minutes, and then she made me turn it off. She said that it was just too weird and made her uncomfortable. Silently, I remembered the words of the master. This is for you, not for her. Catherine and I had not had a traditional psychotherapy session for months. None was necessary. We would chat for a few minutes to catch up on the events of the week, then move quickly to the hypnotic regression. Whether due to the actual memories of major traumas or daily mini-traumas, or to the process of reliving the experiences, Catherine was virtually cured. Her phobias and panic attacks had just about disappeared. She had no fear of death or dying. She was no longer afraid of losing control. Psychiatrists are now using high doses of tranquilizers and antidepressant medicines to treat people with Catherine's symptoms. In addition to the medicines, the patients are also often in intensive psychotherapy, where they are attending phobia group therapy sessions. Many psychiatrists believe that symptoms such as Catherine's have a biological basis, that there are deficiencies in one or several brain chemicals. But now, in a period of weeks, without the use of medicines, traditional therapy, or group therapy, Catherine was nearly cured. This was not just the suppression of symptoms, nor the gritting of teeth and living through it, with a life racked by fears. This was a cure, the absence of symptoms, and she was radiant, serene, and happy beyond my wildest hopes. I pondered the therapeutic purpose of exploring Catherine's past lives. Once we had stumbled into this new realm, her improvement was dramatically rapid, without any medicine. There is some powerful curative force in this realm, a force apparently much more effective than conventional therapy or modern medicines. The force includes remembering and reliving not just momentous traumatic events, but also the daily insults to our bodies, minds, and egos. In my questions, as we scanned lifetimes, I was looking for the patterns of these insults, patterns such as chronic emotional or physical abuse, poverty and starvation, illness and handicaps, persistent persecution and prejudice, repeated failures, and so on. I also kept an eye out for those more piercing tragedies, such as a traumatic death experience, rape, mass catastrophe, or any other horrifying event that might leave a permanent imprint. The technique was similar to reviewing a childhood in conventional therapy, except that the time frame was several thousand years, rather than the usual 10 or 15 years. Therefore, my questions were more direct and more leading than in conventional therapy. but the success of our unorthodox exploration was unquestionable. She and others I later would treat with hypnotic regression was being cured with tremendous rapidity. But were there other explanations for Catherine's past life memories? Could the memories be carried in her genes? This possibility is scientifically remote. Genetic memory requires the unbroken passage of genetic material from generation to generation. Catherine lived all over the earth, and her genetic line was interrupted repeatedly. She would die in a flood with her offspring, or be childless, or die in her youth. Her genetic pool ended and was not transmitted. And what of her survival after death and the in-between state? There was no body and certainly no genetic material, and yet her memories continued. No, the genetic explanation had to be discarded. What about Jung's idea of the collective unconscious, a reservoir of all human memory and experiences that could somehow be tapped into? Divergent cultures often contain similar symbols, even in dreams. According to Jung, the collective unconscious was not personally acquired but inherited somehow in the brain structure. It includes motives and images that spring anew in every culture without relying upon historical tradition or dissemination. I thought Catherine's memories were too specific to be explained by Jung's concept. She did not reveal symbols and universal images or motives. She related detailed descriptions of specific people and places. Jung's ideas seemed too vague, and there was still the in-between state to consider. And what about the masters and their messages? This came through Catherine, but was not of Catherine, and their wisdom was also reflected in Catherine's memories of lifetimes. I knew that this information and these messages were true. I knew this not only from many years of careful study of people, their minds and brains and personalities, but I also knew this intuitively, even before the visit from my father and my son. The dramatic messages and events cascading upon me in my office mirror deep changes in my personal and family life. The transformation gradually crept into my awareness. I would look at my children and my wife and wonder if we had been together before. Had we chosen to share the trials and tragedies and joys of this life? Were we ageless? I felt a great love and tenderness toward them. I realized that their flaws and faults are minor and not really so important. Love is. At our next session, the poet master came to us once more with a message whose meaning I was already feeling in my own life.
Patience and timing. Everything comes when it must come. A life cannot be rushed, cannot be worked on a schedule as so many people want it to be. We must accept what comes to us at a given time and not ask for more. But life is endless, so we never die. We were never really born. We just pass through different phases. There is no end. Humans have many dimensions, but time is not as we see time, but rather in lessons that are learned.
As the treatment continued, spirits came to us again and again, imparting their knowledge of life and of death. There are 7 planes in all, Catherine related one day, in a voice loud and deep. A voice that was not hers. 7 planes.
Each one consisting of many levels, one of them being the plane of recollection. On that plane, you are allowed to collect your thoughts. You are allowed to see your life that has just passed. Those of the higher levels are allowed to see history. They can go back and teach us by learning about history. But we of the lower levels are only allowed to see our own life that has just passed. We have debts that must be paid. If we have not paid out these debts, then we must take them into another life in order that they may be worked through. You progress by paying your debts. Some souls progress faster than others. When you're in physical form, and you are working through a life, if something interrupts your ability to pay that debt, you must return to the plane of recollection, and there you must wait until the soul you owe the debt to has come to see you. And when you both can be returned to physical form at the same time, then you are allowed to return. But you determine when you are going back. You determine what must be done to pay that debt. You will not remember your other lives, only the one you have just come from. Only those souls on the higher level, the sages, are allowed to call upon history and past events to help us, to teach us what we must do. There are 7 planes, 7 through which we must pass before we are returned. One of them is the plane of transition. There you wait. In that plane, it is determined what you will take back with you into the next life. We will all have a dominant trait. This might be greed, or it might be lust, but whatever is determined, you will need to fulfill your debts to those people. Then you must overcome this in that lifetime. You must learn to overcome greed. If you do not, when you return, you will have to carry that trait, as well as another one, into your next life. The burdens will become greater. With each life that you go through and you did not fulfill these debts, the next one will be harder. If you fulfill them, you will be given an easy life. So you choose what life you will have. In the next phase, you are responsible for the life you have. You choose it.
This message was apparently not from a master. He identified himself as we of the lower levels in comparison with those souls on a higher level, the sages. But the knowledge transmitted was both clear and practical. I wondered about the 5 other planes and their qualities. Was the stage of renewal one of those planes? And what about the learning stage and the stage of decisions? All of the wisdom revealed through these messages from souls in various dimensions of the spiritual state was consistent. The style of delivery differed, the phraseology and grammar differed, the sophistication of the verse and vocabulary differed, but the content remained coherent. I was acquiring a systematic body of spiritual knowledge. This knowledge spoke of love and hope, faith and charity. It examined virtues and vices, debts owed to others and to oneself. It included past lifetimes and spiritual planes between lives. And it talked of the soul's progress through harmony and balance, love and wisdom, progress toward a mystical and ecstatic connection with God. During the time I was treating Catherine, Carol's mother, Minette, was dying from the cancer that had spread from her breast to her bones and liver. The process had been going on for 4 years. And could no longer be slowed down by chemotherapy. She was a brave woman who stoically endured the pain and weakness, but the disease was accelerating, and I knew that her death was approaching. I shared Catherine's experiences and revelations with Minette. I was mildly surprised that she, a practical businesswoman, readily accepted this knowledge and wanted to learn more. I gave her books to read, and she did so avidly. She arranged for and took a course with Carol and me in Kabbalah, the Jewish mystical writings that are centuries old. Reincarnation and the in-between planes are basic tenets of Kabbalistic literature, yet most modern-day Jews are unaware of this. Minette's spirit strengthened as her body deteriorated. Her fear of death diminished. She began to anticipate being reunited with her beloved husband, Ben. She believed in the immortality of her soul, and this helped her endure the pain. She was holding on to life, awaiting the birth of another grandchild, her daughter Donna's first baby. Minette met Catherine in the hospital during one of her treatments, and their eyes and words joined peacefully and eagerly. Catherine's sincerity and honesty helped convince Manette that the existence of an afterlife was indeed true. A week before she died, Manette was admitted to the hospital's oncology floor. Carol and I were able to spend time with her, talking about life and death, and what awaited us all after death. A lady of great dignity, Manette decided to die in the hospital, where the nurses could care for her. Donna, her husband, and their 6-week-old daughter came to spend time with her and to say goodbye. We were almost continuously with her. About 6 in the evening of the night Manette died, Carol and I, having just arrived home from the hospital, both experienced a strong urge to go back. The next 6 or 7 hours were filled with serenity and a transcendental spiritual energy. Although her breathing was labored, Manette had no more pain. We talked about her transition to the in-between state, the bright light, and the spiritual presence. She reviewed her life, mostly silently, and struggled to accept the negative parts. She seemed to know that she couldn't let go until this process was completed. She was waiting for a very specific time to die, in the early morning. She grew impatient for this time to come. Manette was the first person I had guided to and through death in this manner. She was strengthened, and our grief was assuaged by the entire experience. Gradually, I discovered that my ability to heal my patients had greatly expanded, not just with phobias and anxieties, but especially in death and dying or grief counseling. I intuitively knew what was wrong and what directions to take in therapy. I was able to convey feelings of peacefulness, calm, and hope. After Manette's death, many others who were either dying or who were the survivors of a loved one's death came for help. Many were not ready to know about Catherine or the literature about life after death. But even without imparting such specific knowledge, I felt that I could still deliver the message, a tone of voice, an empathic understanding of the process and of their fears and feelings, a look, a touch, a word, all could get through at some level and touch a chord of hope, of forgotten spirituality, of shared humanity, or even more. And for those ready for more, to suggest readings and to share my experiences with Catherine and others was like opening a window to a fresh breeze. The ones who were ready were revived. They gained insights even more rapidly. I believe strongly that therapists must have open minds. Just as more scientific work is necessary to document death and dying experiences, such as Catherine's, so is more experiential work necessary in the field. Therapists need to consider the possibility of life after death and integrate it into their counseling. They do not have to use hypnotic regressions, but they should keep their minds open, share their knowledge with their patients, and not discount their patients' experiences. People are now devastated by threats to their mortality, the plague of AIDS, nuclear holocaust, terrorism, disease, and many other catastrophes hang over our heads and torture us daily. Many teenagers believe that they won't live past their 20s. This is incredible, reflecting the tremendous stresses in our society. On the individual level, Manette's reaction to Catherine's messages is encouraging. Her spirit had strengthened, and she had felt hope in the face of great physical pain and bodily deterioration. But the messages are for all of us, not just the dying. There is hope for us, too. We need more clinicians and scientists to report on other Catherines to confirm and expand her messages. The answers are there. We are immortal. We will always be together. Over 4 years have passed since Catherine and I shared the incredible experiences I have told you about. We have both been profoundly changed. Catherine remains cured, without any recurrence of her original difficulties. She is now free to fully enjoy her life, no longer crippled by her disabling symptoms. She has found a sense of happiness and contentment that she never thought was possible. She no longer fears illness or death. Life has a meaning and purpose for her now that she is balanced and in harmony with herself. She radiates an inner peace that many wish for, but few attain. She feels more spiritual. To Catherine, what has happened is all very real. She does not doubt the veracity of any of it, and she accepts it all as an integral part of who she is. She has no interest in pursuing the study of psychic phenomena, feeling that she knows in a way that cannot be learned from books or lectures. People who are dying, or who have a family member dying, often seek her out. They seem drawn to her. She sits and talks to them, and they feel better. My life has changed almost as drastically as Catherine's. I have become more intuitive, more aware of the hidden, secret parts of my patients, colleagues, and friends. I seem to know a great deal about them, even before I should. My values and life goals have shifted to a more humanistic, less accumulative focus. I still write scientific papers, lecture at professional meetings, and run the Department of Psychiatry. But now I straddle two worlds, the phenomenal world of the five senses, represented by our bodies and physical needs, and the greater world of the non-physical planes, represented by our souls and spirits. I know that the worlds are connected, that all is energy, yet they often seem so far apart. My job is to connect the worlds, to document carefully and scientifically their unity. During my entire experience with Catherine, I had been reluctant to discuss her revelations with other professionals. Actually, except for my wife Carol and a few others who were safe, I had not shared this remarkable information with others at all. I knew the knowledge from our sessions was both true and extremely important, yet anxiety about the reactions of my professional and scientific colleagues caused me to keep silent. I was still concerned with my reputation, career, and what others thought of me. But I am no longer concerned with the effect that telling Catherine's story may have on my career. The information that I have shared here is far more important and, if heeded, will be far more beneficial to the world than anything I can do on an individual basis in my office. I hope that you will be helped by what you have heard here. I hope that your own fear of death has been diminished, and that the messages offered to you about the true meaning of life will free you to go about living your life to the fullest, seeking harmony and inner peace, and reaching out in love to your fellow humans.
Many Lives, Many Masters was written and read by Dr. Brian L. Weiss. It was abridged for audio by Lauren Belfer. Catherine was read by Julie Boyd. It was recorded and edited by John Austin, post-production by Karen Perlman. The associate producer was Linda Ross. Many Lives, Many Masters was directed and produced by Carol Shapiro.
This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.